sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The S&P logs its longest losing streak since when? Crude plunges as OPEC just can't agree. Elections are just days away, and a few stocks to watch. All this and much more on episode number 483 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Just days away from the election, and here we are on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, talking about money, finances, investments, ideas, and of course, the markets with relation to how they're going to react on Tuesday. It's anyone's guess, but this is your host, Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for being here with me. I don't know about you, but I'm getting, kind of tired of this whole election thing. I thought that over the years, it couldn't get much worse. You know what I'm talking about. The fact is that this negative campaigning thing has really reached a new level of just absolute disgustingness. Just horrible. But here we are, and we have the choice to make. You may have voted already. I was actually driving up in Palm Beach today, and I saw that there was an election site for early elections, and the line was wrapped around the building. There must have been, 300 people. So I was pretty amazed by that. One of the great things I thought was enterprising food trucks were hanging around to make sure that all the people were well fed. But on the way back, about 2 or 3 hours later from a brunch I attended with my folks, I passed the same place and I couldn't believe it. The lines were just as long. So whether these are smart people that are saying, you know what, I don't want to deal with the lines on Tuesday, or whether it is the fact that the lines are going to be long no matter when from now until the final vote is cast on Tuesday, because of all of the concern about either side. You know, if you're a Democrat and maybe you're looking for Hillary Clinton to get in office, or you're a Republican, you want Trump, or whoever it is that you want or don't want in office. This election seems to me to be more about who you don't want to be in office. And people are voting in that way. And it could bring out a record number of voters because of all the things that are involved in this particular election. We saw that an interesting note right before the futures markets were going to open, about 2 hours before on Sunday evening, we saw that the FBI said, we reviewed all those emails by that were on the computer of Anthony Weiner, and most of them, if not all of them, were duplicates. And therefore, we're standing by what we said back in July that, there's nothing to do from here. So probably we may see a bit of a relief rally, because a lot of the concern that was going into this, and I don't care if you're Republican or, not aligned, if you're Democrat, it doesn't matter. Markets seem to want to have the same thing going on as we've had for some time, and that's a Democrat in the White House. And already we've been seeing that the U.S. dollar has popped up dramatically. And why is that? Well, the fact is that some of the spill-off of the markets over the last several weeks, and particularly the last week and a half or so, has been because we're seeing currencies, in particular the U.S. dollar, is coming down significantly, which would, you would usually think that that's good for a stock market, because companies could have a lot more benefit in the U.S. for their exports. But for whatever reason, the weakness that is being shown will be the weakness for the economy, at least from the market's perspective, if Donald Trump won the election. As a matter of fact, there's a couple of reports out today that showed that most currency traders are looking at a Donald Trump victory with about a 4 or 5% additional drop in the U.S. dollar. And if Hillary Clinton is actually elected and comes into office, well, then there'll be a slight increase in the dollar from where we are, about 2%. That's what the currency traders are saying. And we saw the incredible move of the markets last week. Couldn't get any bid, even with the decent jobs number that we saw, which we'll talk about in a moment. There was no bid. By the end of the day on Friday, even though there was some buying activity going in, the markets turned negative and sloped all the way down into negative territory. And now the S&P is on its longest losing streak, for whatever that means, back to 1980. In other words, the daily consecutive losses are the longest since 1980. The difference is we saw that it was back to 2008 for a while. Now Friday made it back to 1980. But those losses were much greater. Right now, the S&P is off about 5% from its high. When we saw those consecutive losses back in 2008, it was like off 20%. The Russell 2000 from its high last July is off about 9, 10%. The Dow's off about 5%. So the losses are significant, very significant, you know, for what we've been seeing prior to, let's say, September, where there was just this consolidation that was going on for some time. And there was really no movement of any consequence up or down for months. That range we've been talking about for some time has been pretty tight. But now what we're seeing is that there is a breakdown. And again, for whatever the reason is, whether you want to call it earnings, the concern about the Fed possibly, at least looking like about a 75% chance they will hike rates in December at this point, because they came out last week and said, nothing, no rate hike at this point. But they did mention that the odds of a rate hike coming soon are increasing as we go along. Now, the NASDAQ for the year is about flat. The S&P is still up about 2%. The VIX hit almost 21, up significantly. And my thought is that that is an interesting area to play. If, in fact, we do see Hillary Clinton win, I would suspect that according to what we're seeing with markets, whether you like Hillary Clinton or not, whether you're going to throw a pie in my face right now, if you're even suggesting that's a situation, forget that. I'm not talking about whether I like this one or that one. What I'm talking about is markets. And let's focus on that for a second. Let's not get the emotions of who I want as president in. Let's just look at what markets are telling us at this point. And what the markets are telling us is, as Donald Trump has gained in the polls and the race has tightened, the VIX has jumped significantly. So if you want to play the VIX, whether it's through an ETF or through the options themselves, you want to look at it is as if, in fact, the odds are that Hillary Clinton will come into office, that VIX may come down substantially. So you could play through an inverse ETF or maybe even puts on the VIX option itself. And if you want to play the other side, if you think seriously, not just because what you want, but what you believe is really going to be shown in the polls and what's going to happen with market reaction, even from a standpoint of just having protection on your portfolio, simple protection on your portfolio, then maybe you want to buy the VIX and look for a very quick move. Now, I would say, though, that even if we see a market flush out after the election, regardless of who is in there, the Fed is going to probably be that much more, they would be that much more content to stay with the current rates if markets really go into a tizzy. Therefore, some of the buying that we have seen on those dips may return. In fact, let me just give you one quick point here. That over history, we've seen that when certain indicators reach levels of extreme oversold, there is the opportunity to have a very quick snapback, even if it's temporary, even if it's short term. Right now, the KRI, which is the key reversal indicator, which we have, it's a proprietary indicator that we use. We've seen the last 3 days, on average, be about a negative four, negative five. Negative six is pretty ugly territory. Negative five, and if we see consistent negative four, negative fives for a few days, that's telling us that we're seeing a very significant area of concern by markets and an oversold situation that is that needs to blow off, that we need to kind of get back to where we were to have a market in a neutral mode. We're seeing the Spearman down in the 90s, negative 90s, that is. We're seeing the McClellan down at, I think, 175 or so, or you know, pretty low. And usually when you see those levels, if you ever compare the various markets, with the, whether it's the S&P, the Russell, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, the New York Composite, when you look at these and you put a chart below them of when you see these negative levels or even the opposite, which would be these top levels, so plus 200, plus 175 on the McClellan, or a plus 80 or a 90 on the Spearman, where they're starting to turn a little bit, or a plus 5, a plus 4 on the KRI. These are times that you want to look at as, are we seeing a capitulation level that is possible for a U-turn, an about-face for markets in the near term? And I would say that as of actually probably on the close Thursday and on Friday, that the real potential was there. And already we saw on Friday that start to move up. But again, we're getting into the weekend. Right now, with all the news out there that's going on around the world and here in the U.S. with the elections, not many traders really want to hold on to positions very long. So they're looking for a very quick move and then get themselves flat by the end of the day. So I would venture to say that over the next couple of days, depending on if any other major news breaks otherwise, that into the election, if in fact this whole email thing is put to rest for a while and there's nothing else that is significant breaking from either WikiLeaks or whoever on either side, whether it's the Republican or the Democrat level of announcement that would really cause major harm to either party and either candidate at this point, that there is the very high potential of many of the shorts that got in there over the last couple of weeks to start to say, you know what, I need to square off my positions before this election is completed. So think about that. Just sit back and kind of, you know, think about what I'm talking about here and realize that, again, without the emotions of where you think things will play, how markets are going to play out there, and, you know, set yourself up accordingly. Now, before we go on, I want to mention something. I mentioned this last show. As a matter of fact, we had Frank Curzio on himself to discuss his new venture. And I talked to him over the weekend that 70% off, that special where you get a major discount plus a year free of his newsletter from Curzio Research, is going to end. And it's not going to be seen again from what I understand. So if you want to do so, it's going to end, I believe, Monday night, it may be into Tuesday, but Monday night is really the last time you can get it. Now, a few people have already taken advantage of that. They wrote into me and thanked me for that. If you have any desire to get Frank Curzio's newsletter, and in particular, one of the major deals that he's talking about is a particular stock where you can actually get warrants and a few other things. But aside from that, just his picks, and he's doing a lot of real deep dives into the area of gold and stocks related to gold and mining and materials. And if you know anything about Frank, and if you love what he has to say, this is your time to really go out and get what he's talking about. I'll put a link on right on the middle of the show notes for thedisciplinedinvestor.com. This particular episode, click it, check it out. There's a video. There's also, it's a pretty long discussion of what he's talking about. He wanted to really kind of get you all the information up front about what's going on with this particular first opportunity that he has, this recent pick that he has. So I highly encourage you that if you ever thought about getting Curzio's newsletters, this is the time. You're not going to get it as cheap as this ever again. It's not cheap, but I'll tell you right now, but it's definitely something that can make you some money. So make sure to go over there and check it out. All right, let's talk about some economics here, and then I want to talk about the boat show I went to this weekend. I want to talk about some stocks that also we have been looking at recently, as well as you know, some of the areas of what's going on with some of the markets. We'll kind of move on from there as well. But let's kind of go backwards for a second and then look forward. So already we saw that last week the Fed decided, hey, you know what? Again, we're standing pat for the time being. And that was ahead of the jobs numbers that we were going to see on Friday. So what happened there? So we saw that unemployment fell to 4.9% in October. And there's about 161,000 new workers added to the payrolls. And that was a positive number, clearly, no question about that. Year-over-year wage growth, which was something that was important for a lot of people to be looking at to see if, in fact, hey, we got all this employment that's going on, and why aren't we seeing any kind of significant wage growth? Well, we did see it finally in this report, where year-over-year wage growth reached 2.8%, which was the best number since June of 2009. Average hourly pay rose about 10 cents last month. Now, the other thing that was really interesting in the report that I thought was probably the best part of this report from the aspect of seeing a good report on employment was that the August and September numbers that we saw previously were revised up a total of 44,000. So another 44,000 jobs were added to the payroll in August and September. Now, for those of you that kind of don't believe all these numbers and looking at these with, kind of one eye closed and questioning, is this really factual? What I can tell you is that two things. First, a lot of the jobs that were added were, we'll call it lower paying, technical type of jobs. And much of the gains that were seen in terms of the wage base and the wage growth were also in the areas of some of the lower paid employment type of situations. But still, we also saw that the labor participation rate changed slightly, not enough to really cause any kind of significant question in terms of the unemployment rate at 4.9%. But yet, at the same time, I cannot go back and forth with, but this and that, and on the other hand, and, comparing this to that. But overall, if you look at this, the number was good. I really don't have too much of a problem with the numbers. We're seeing a consistent, it's not like it's a one-off here. We're seeing consistent numbers above the 150 mark in terms of new additions to payrolls. It aligns very well with the initial claims numbers that we see on Thursday, each and every Thursday. So overall, things are generally good. Now, the other thing that we saw that was kind of good was we have now 9 months of, let's just say that in general, we've seen maybe not great, but good overall consumer spending. We saw a 0.5% increase and a 0.3% increase in personal income. So 0.5% in personal spending, 0.3% in personal income. Adjusted for inflation, of course, that we know there's not much inflation. The consumer spending advanced about 0.3% for the month of September. But, in August, on an inflation-adjusted basis, that was a different story. That was down 0.2. The other thing that we saw, this was a kind of a week of some of the major numbers, aside from GDP, but I always look at the manufacturing numbers. Now, while the U.S. is not a major manufacturing hub like it used to be, it's still very important to look at both the manufacturing number from the ISM and also the non-manufacturing or the service index from the ISM. And we saw that last week, both of those were over the 50 line, which is that demarcation point for either contraction or expansion. So the ISM PMI or the manufacturing number came in at 51.9. It was up half a point. The service PMI, though, services came in at 54.8. That was good. That was a good number. So we did see that the Dow Jones fell about 1.5% for the week, the S&P about almost 2%, the NASDAQ fell about 2.75% for the week. So what do we have coming up this week? Well, of course, we know the election is going to throw everything off into a wild tizzy. But aside from that, we're going to see some earnings. So this week, we're going to see Marriott International, which is kind of interesting because we're going to see how the Airbnb and the various online alternatives, whether it's even the Expedia or other hotel alternatives, are going to be hurting some of the revenues and the earnings of the hotel and leisure industry, like MGM Resorts also coming in. Then we have Priceline. So you have Marriott, MGM, and Priceline Now, of course, we have Hertz Global coming in too. So right there, you got a 1-2 punch, right? We're looking at the Uber alternative for car rentals, or the ride-sharing alternative, which is Uber and Lyft, for car rentals, which is Hertz and Avis, et cetera. And we're going to see how Hertz does. We're going to see Marriott International, MGM, and we're going to see Priceline. Now, we're also going to be seeing on Tuesday, CVS Health. We're going to see home builder D.R. Horton come in. TripAdvisor will be coming in. So, again, back to the whole area of travel and hotels and airlines and alternatives are going to come into the play very quickly next week. Now, Wednesday, we're going to look at earnings from Green Dot, NetEase, Norwegian Cruise Lines, Popeyes, and Wendy's. We've got some new claims reports coming in Thursday, of course. Kohl's, Macy's, Michael Kors, Nordstrom's, Ralph Lauren, and Walt Disney will be Thursday. And on Friday, which is Veterans Day, the stock market's open. The bond market will be closed. We're going to see the initial numbers from the University of Michigan in terms of consumer sentiment, which has been not great lately. And we're going to see JCPenney and Weibo, depending on how you want to pronounce it. It's kind of like the Twitter of China is going to be putting out their numbers as well. So we have, starting off the beginning of the week, obviously action-packed. Then we have some very important numbers from many firms that are very representative of some of the concerns we have in certain areas of the U.S. economy right now, and particularly the sharing economy. And, I thought it was interesting because for the longest time, the whole employment discussion and productivity and wage growth has been chalked up as, well, there's a lot of excess, and it's just because it's overhang still from the financial crisis, and because the Fed, while it, is pouring money through low interest rates and liquidity on the markets, it's really, really not helping employment. It's kind of healing it a bit, but it's not really supercharging it. And all these excuses and the whole idea that technology advancements are not some of the underlying problems associated with our, lack of general growth and inflation, et cetera, has been pretty much put to the side, saying, no, that's not what it is. But recently, I don't know if you've been hearing this, but recently, over the last, few months, you've been all of a sudden hearing, well, technology is one of the reasons why we're seeing that inflation has really not picked up, because consumers now have so many more options and buying abilities to compare prices, et cetera. And they're talking about how the automation has been displacing workers and how robotics has been displacing workers, creating much more efficiency to the company at the expense of the average worker. Huh. All of a sudden, there's a realization, something we've talked about 4 years ago, that, you better be careful here, because the more technology innovation you have and the more you supplant the individual in favor of technology for cost efficiency and for margins and for creating a much better bottom line, now that's something you need to be concerned about long term. But for the longest time, everybody said, that's not possible. And now, out of nowhere, you start to hear the beginnings of the realization that something is there. And just take the automation of automobiles and the recent story we saw about that truck that was driven by itself from, I think it was 120 miles, a beer truck. Remember that story? The beer truck drove 120 miles by itself in a test. How many truckers are going to be displaced? And if those truckers are displaced, where are they going to go and what are they going to do? And the answer has always been, well, the more technology we have, while it will eliminate some workers and certain industries will actually have a much lower level of employment, those workers that have been displaced will now be able to be freed up to move into the area of technology. And we're going to have a lot more technology employment. The problem with this is, guys, that, I don't know how all of a sudden we take a trucker who's been trucking for the last 30 years of their life, 20 years of their life, and that's what they know, and all of a sudden have them coding Really? What? How does that play out? Elon Musk, in a recent speech or a recent interview, said that, well, the technology, yeah, while it may displace people, you know what the good side of this is? It will give them a lot more time to do things that they enjoy. It will give them a lot more time that they don't have to be working at some of these very arduous and very difficult tasks, and maybe even those tasks that are very physically demanding. And I guess what he was saying was that they'll be freed up maybe to learn more and then do something they enjoy to possibly turn it into a new career or possibly even gather the skills to be in a much higher level of the employment bracket. I'm thinking, really? Does that make any sense at all? Yeah, I could see a few people surely saying, you know, finally, okay, gosh, all right, I was thinking about this for years and boy, I don't want to be doing that job anymore. They get pushed out and now they'd be like, all right, well, I'm being forced into this. I'll be able to do some things I enjoy more, like, I don't know, some hobbies, play golf a little bit more, et cetera. Maybe some of those will turn into golfing pros, and maybe some of those people that have been displaced and now have more time to do things will take some classes and start learning a different skill and then move up into a higher paying job that they enjoy more than they were doing before. But I think it's very narrow focus and a little bit of thinking in a way that doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of the reality of it's not that easy. It's just not that easy. I think Elon Musk, from his high plateau of looking down at all the workers out there, see, it is easy because, well, you know what? If he was freed up to do something else, he would start another business. But, you know, he has got $1 billion to invest in it, and he'll just start a business. Most people don't have that. They don't even have $10,000 they could risk in starting up a business that, again, what kind of business can you actually start up with $10,000 anyway? Or $100,000? You can't start a restaurant for $100,000 these days. Between the requirement of having, let's just say, 6 months to a year's worth of rent before any money comes in of substance, of significance, and the fact that you need to redecorate and buy all the goods and various things to get the business going, whatever the business may be, whether it's desks or chairs or computers, hire the employees, get the product out, all the advertising. Yeah. Anyway. So let's kind of move away from that. But I think that was kind of an important thing to discuss, this whole idea that, first of all, as I mentioned at the beginning, that there may be a quick change in markets now that we have a little bit of relief from this whole email scandal, at least a little bit of relief. And I would be looking for that VIX to come in substantially from where it was. And then we still have some earnings issues to be concerned about. Clearly, we're almost finished with earnings season, but still not there. About 70%, about on the average, most companies that were supposed to, the amount of companies that were supposed to beat, that always have beat, the percentage has beaten. Revenue's a little bit better, but now we have oil. And in general, estimates were that, well, we're going to see a nice pickup of oil company earnings as oil recovers. And oil did recover after OPEC did their song and dance and said, oh, you know what? We're going to definitely have an agreement in place in November sometime that is going to allow us to slow down production, or at least freeze production, put some kind of a constraint on the overall amount of oil that was being pushed into markets. And therefore, we saw that big rally in oil from down in the mid-40s up to about 52. And now we see the exact return of, well, OPEC can't make up their minds. They can't decide on anything. They can't figure out what's going on. And then, of course, Saudi Arabia is going to pump even more, and Iraq's going to pump even more, and Iran's going to pump even more. And now all of a sudden we see that the inventories had their largest build in years recently, and oil is now sub 45. I think we finished about 45 and a quarter or so on Friday. And that's with the dollar coming in. So now what happens if the dollar comes up? I would suspect that oil and gold could still see a bit, well, we'll see probably a bit more of a concerning move if the dollar starts to ramp higher from the low levels that we've seen recently. But on top of that, the S&P 500 earnings overall were supposed to be helped and enhanced by the fact that oil companies were going to have a lot more, or going to have profitability, not losses, moving into the next quarter or so. That doesn't seem to be the case with oil down in the mid-40s. And the fact that now we have, we're seeing just 2 months after all of this swirling around by OPEC and their, you know, little show that they did to try to pop up oil prices, which we now know that they can't be trusted. And in fact, now it's going to be very suspect anytime they mention that they have some kind of agreement in place, unless they do it right away and they're very firm about it, direct about it, and implement it at the time of the announcement. I don't think markets are going to put up with much more of the shenanigans that they have provided for us over the last 6 months or so, because now you can't trust them. And traders are going to be like, well, you know what? Show me the money first and then we'll deal with it. I'm not coming in after the fact with losses because you said that this was going to happen and then somehow you reverse this along the way. So oil right now is in a precarious point. We're going to have to watch on the inventories, which again, are growing once again. And that could be somewhat of a concern for things like bonds, particularly the bonds of the companies in the oil sector and related sector, because those bonds were the ones that really caused a lot of concern in terms of their yields when they popped up significantly when oil first flushed lower below 40s and at the low 40 levels. And at 44, we'll start seeing again big concerns by some companies that maybe the price adjustments that they had recently and their bond valuations are not going to be living at the levels that they had been, even though interest rates are low and people are looking for yield at any cost. There'll be a concern with those high yield bonds. And if we do see that spread widen once again, if we see that, that will be an area of concern. So we have a lot to kind of get through by the end of the year, not to mention, of course, once again, the election this week. And like I said, can't wait till this is over. Can't wait till that's over. And I can't wait until the Fed is kind of gone, which they're not going to be. But at least we know a defined date for the election, at least. And then we'll have to go from there. Let's talk about a couple of stocks. I thought this was kind of interesting. Did you see this? About a year and a half, maybe a year and a half ago, I started talking about this whole idea that Fitbit's in trouble, that Fitbit's a one-hit wonder. It's a stock similar that we've seen other similar situations over time that had a great product but then didn't expand their product line, didn't keep up with the fact that once the product line got out there and there was no significant enhancements or changes or there was going to be a problem. And the stock ran up to about $51 back in 2015. Now it's sub $9. 84% decline after probably was the most, one of the most miserable earnings reports that I've ever seen. Not only in current earnings, but really the outlook was abysmal. Horrible. And this is because there are alternatives. And they've had some trouble with their heart rate monitors, which we've talked about many times here and on DH Unplugged. This was a real big flop. Investors were all over it. Remember this investor? Oh, Fitbit, this is great. But then we saw the day the Apple Watch came out, I think it was the day that we had to all realize that, you know what, this thing is not going to be the end-all be-all. And when all these other companies like Garmin and, you know, you look at Samsung, and all these companies copied it, and even some companies went out of the business on this. And you had companies like Xiaomi come out with a $15 alternative to the basic band that they had. While you may love your Fitbit, and it may tell you all these great things about your exercise schedule, and it may be a little bit of a alternative to, and a cheaper alternative to, let's say, an Apple iWatch, the fact of the matter is that still, sales have been leaking pretty substantially. And with that in mind, what we've seen is that the stock has been lower and lower and lower. So this is an interesting, I think the thing about Fitbit, it's an interesting dissection of what happens with a euphoria type of market move for a stock that comes out on an IPO. And then the realization over time, even though there's a lot of fighting that goes on with the investors about whether it's going to, you know, really be a continuation of that momentum move higher, or the reality that, you know what, This isn't what it was all cracked up to be. Another great example of this, GoPro. Now, GoPro had another really bad quarter. Now, the stock held up pretty well. In fact, the stock was down, I think, about at one point after its earnings on Friday morning, I think came out the night before, it was down about 19% in the after hours on Thursday. The stock came in pretty hard and then started to rise a little bit. I think there is still a lot of people holding on to the hope that maybe they'll be bought out one day, that they're going to come up with some great earnings numbers on their new drone product, or maybe they're going to have a new technology, or something's going to all of a sudden click, or maybe it's just the same story as Fitbit, that there's a lot of fighting that's going on, and there's a lot of people that really believe in it, but there's still just a one-hit wonder. The stock was, in the past, at a high of $90 per share. It's now at 11. And these two stocks have a lot in common. Yeah, they're technology, you know, et cetera. But, you know, you think about the Polaroid camera. And there was, that was a great product for some time. You look at just the simple point-and-shoot 35mm or equivalent digital camera. That was a great product. But it, you know what? You look at some of the things that have happened over the years, like the advancement of the cameras in smartphones, or the fact that there was better technology that came out a lot smaller, like the GoPro compared to other cameras and video cameras, et cetera. You know, you used to have these gigantic video cameras that you'd carry around, or at least lug around, if you wanted to take really good videos. And then you got this little bitty GoPro thing that could take 4K video. And wow, that was a big advancement. It got smaller. We got easier to use. We got easier to carry. We got cheaper overall. But again, kind of a one-hit wonder. If you want to, maybe a two-hit wonder when it comes to GoPro, if you want to count in their drone product. But generally speaking, these two stocks have a lot in common. I think we could really use this as a lesson as to what to look for, when to realize that the euphoria and the move to the upside is a little bit overdone, and then to watch, you know, as other companies continually pound away at their turf and come up with alternatives, how these stocks can really be hurt. Now, I started to think about this. I said, okay, what do these stocks have in common? Okay, I know that. What to look for? Okay, I think I understand what's happening there. And I started to say, what other companies are like this? And a lot of people have been recently saying, I don't really believe this, by the way, that Apple is becoming kind of a one-hit wonder where there's not a lot of technology advancement. And wondering if we could see a similar move. Now, of course, Apple has had their products a lot longer, and they've made a lot of money, and they have just an enormous amount of money in cash, and it's a cash cow. So my thinking is that while Apple may be in a little bit of a drought in terms of technology enhancement, much different than these other two companies. Now, could we see another company somehow come in and do a great job like we saw recently with Microsoft with their new Surface Pro desktop and their new dial and their new pricing and the pen and all these things that really look unbelievable in terms of a touchscreen desktop that really can be used by designers? Now we have the software from Adobe that can be used on that platform as well. Now, if you're a hardcore Mac guy, you're going to be like, you know what? And if you're a gal that says, you know what, there's no way because, you know, we have this tablet over here and it's by Apple or Samsung or whatever it's going to be, and no way. Fine. If you're used to one product and you're in the graphics business and you say, well, you know what, the Apple's the only one that I'm going to use. Okay, fine. But I got to tell you, this product by Microsoft is a pretty good, I think, at least entry into the area that would make a lot of people think twice and possibly think about at least testing and using one of these to see if it can hold up. In terms of Apple and their iPhone, well, we know that really they're the number one in that position. In terms of, there's a lot more Android sold. We know that. But the Apple device and the ecosystem they have and the things they built around it are well used and are something that's not going to go away for some time. So even if, in fact, they don't have any technology advancement or an evolution of the technology, just incremental over time, the iPhone still is a major product that they have good margins on, a massive user base. And even if the iPhone itself doesn't have a lot to offer in terms of advancement, well, assuming they don't fall behind something very significantly, they still have their all their services that they offer between the App Store and music and everything else that goes along with that, the iCloud, that is used that I don't think will be the same as a GoPro or Fitbit. Now, in terms of the one other thing that they do have that they've been very, they've been behind the curve on is this whole touchscreen when it comes to the MacBooks. And it seems to me that, and you've heard me talk about this 100 times, that they're just very afraid of cannibalizing their iPad Pro and their iPad devices with any kind of a move into a touchscreen, a true touchscreen on their MacBooks. I think they're going to be forced into that one day and they're going to have to make a choice. But right now, again, it is what, you know, it is this great device that has this new touchpad thing. We'll have to see what the reviews are. So far, they haven't been great. So is Apple like a GoPro or a Fitbit? Again, you could use these as benchmarks to look at product advancement, alternatives, competition, pricing, margins, etc., new technology. Absolutely not. Is Apple going to go the way of the Fitbit? That, you know, I don't think so. Is Apple possibly one day going to be unseated? Is it going to be a new product entirely? Who knows? Maybe you'll have a phone built into your hand. You'll have some other communication device that just sits in your ear that doesn't even need anything. It'll have a heads-up display with glasses like we're seeing, you know, that we saw with the failed product from Google. Or there is something that we don't know about in the future that may, in fact, change the entire landscape of this. But at this point right now, at least for the time being, I don't see anything that's very significant. But that's me. If you have any particular names that you think are a one-hit wonder that, and a lot of these are in technology or consumer goods, by the way, consumer discretionary types of goods, send them over to me. What you could do is just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and there's a little box in there that says Ask Andrew. Send me your little comments there. I'd like to hear them. Let's kind of finish up this episode with a couple of other things, what to expect on the elections. Of course, we have the other thing that's a big issue, which is the marijuana stocks. And if you watch some of these, a lot of these are very small, pink sheet or bulletin board, NASDAQ, sub $1, many of them. They've been on an incredible run. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that there is the idea that about 15 different states are going to be voting on marijuana, various marijuana laws, some of them for legalization, some for legalization for recreational use, some for legalization for medical use only. But there is a significant amount of interest in many of these stocks. I believe that probably after the election, even if we get a very strong vote pro marijuana laws, which is the expectation, by the way, I think that still a lot of these may cool a little bit and there'll be a better buying point for some of these, because some of these don't even have any significant amount of revenues and it's just built up on speculation. So keep a watch on these names. I put a few different shows ago and I talked about it on DH Unplugged. I put a list up, I think two shows ago over on dhunplugged.com in the show notes of some of the stocks that you could watch when it comes to the marijuana stocks. Now we're going to end this. I mentioned the Curzio thing, so make sure to get that. Go over to the site and click on that and just go watch. There's a video and there's another talking point conversation about this newsletter that you want to see. The other thing that I'll mention to you also is, in ahead of the election, how did we actually set up portfolios? So when it came to our global allocations, which is our more traditional style of investing, where we take a global view and we use a diversified approach through ETFs, mutual funds, institutional style investing. And it's a little bit more conservative than some of our other strategies, but a lot of people want that. And that's kind of what we've been doing for the last 25 plus years. So what do we do ahead of the election? Well, I can tell you a few things. First of all, over the last several months, we've been reducing down certain sectors. Any of the long-term bond exposure, this is not only election-based, but it's also Fed-based, we've been shortening up dramatically. We've added tips to the portfolio, treasury, inflation, protected securities. We've been pushing those into the portfolio, thinking that inflation will start to tick up. As a matter of fact, one of the best sectors this year has been tips, about 6 or 7%, depending on the particular investment that you have. And they've been doing very, very well. We've also been bringing down some of the international and small cap exposure, which is working out pretty well. I would think that probably we will realign the portfolio shortly to bring those back up to the positioning that we want to have, not light on either of those, after the election, after some time goes by and the election is kind of like out of the picture, so we can actually get back to business as usual. I would say, you know, in terms of the time frame, the probable level is going to be towards the end of the year, beginning of next year, once we can get through the Fed, whatever's going on there, and whatever they decide, hopefully for a rate hike, and just get that out of the frame of the discussion for some time, you know, that we've had for some time. And depending on the election results and how the markets react to that and what's going on in Europe with Brexit, et cetera, then we will kind of push back into that and maybe even add some international exposure back, as well as some of the small caps and mid caps as well. And we've also begun to work on adding a non-aligned fund-to-fund style alternative investment strategy to portfolios as well. We did a lot of research over the last 3-4 months on where to actually get this. There's a few different mutual funds that fit the bill for that. And they're actively managed, and we've kind of narrowed into two of them that have had not only good results, they're inexpensive in terms of overall fee structures relative to peers, and also they have good ratios in terms of short ratios and trainer ratios and things of that nature that you want to look at in terms of the mutual fund world on how you really look at risk-adjusted performance. So overall, we've taken a little bit more of a conservative approach, which has worked out very, very nicely. And I'm very pleased of that allocation change. And we'll probably move back. Again, we'll have to reconsider all the different variables that happened. But, you know, going into this election and going into the end of the year and going into a time period where we have a uncertainty around the world, prices in terms of earnings ratio differentials, high. When we look at it from a variety of different angles in the U.S. and looking at the valuations, you know, it was pretty prudent to take some money off the table and to shorten up bonds. And I've talked about that before. I just wanted to reinforce that to you one last time. And we'll finish up by telling you that I went to the boat show this weekend. This is the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. It's a big week down here in Fort Lauderdale. One of the probably the best show in the country, from what I understand, in terms of in-water and out-of-water, as well as electronics and you know, lures and fishing and all this good stuff. I found out something amazing. The boat show over the weekend, so from Thursday, the actual boat show, Thursday through Sunday, generates about $850 million in total revenue from a variety of, you know, whether it's the hotels, whether it's the boat show itself, whether it's from sales, whether it's from boat sales, whatever, $850 million of total revenue, which is more than cities make in Super Bowls, which is pretty amazing. Now, one of the things that I found really kind of fascinating about the boat show, I went to a couple of the dealers and I spoke to them. And one of the things they were telling me was that this particular boat show this year, they weren't actually selling a lot of boats compared to what they sold at boat shows in previous years. And the reason for that is there's no real advantage right now to buy at the boat shows. The specials are not that great because they all have such an incredible backlog of orders that they're waiting to build. And even with these unbelievable prices of boats, by the way, that boat pricing has gone through the roof. It's amazing to see the price of some of these boats, these new boats, you know, a 25-foot boat, $175,000. I mean, it used to be like $50,000, $40,000. Last few years, these prices have gone through the roof. Now, even with this, what we're seeing is that, you know, the time to buy a boat is probably not now. The time to buy boats are after all the inventory gets out. Maybe there's a little bit of softness in the economy, ever so slight, and all of a sudden there's all this inventory of people looking at this saying, wait a minute, you know what? I was looking to sell my boat. That's why I bought this boat. I can't really sell my used boat because there's just, you know, everybody's got boats right now. And all of a sudden you got them coming on the market with their new boat. So now you have people stuck with an old boat and a new boat, and they got to get rid of their old boat. And now they have to, time is coming up on this order that they have that may be 6 months or 12 months out on their new build. And they're stuck with this old boat. Now we got to wait. You got to wait for that to turn over, and that's time to buy it. So I think there is a possible slowdown coming for the pricing of this. And as they were talking about this major weight that's going on, it really does correlate pretty highly with the fact that we have low interest rates and that we are seeing a buying frenzy go on in the boating industry, even with these high prices, which will just give us that much more benefit in terms of if you happen to be looking for a boat on the used side, maybe a few months down the road, maybe a year down the road, there'll be an influx of inventory like you haven't seen, because there is this balancing act going on with people that have a boat. They bought a new boat. They want to sell their boat at the right time. And all of a sudden, it's all going to come onto the market in the next 6 to 12 months. So just a little something there. You may see the same thing in terms of housing as well. It kind of works together. Anyway, we'll wrap it up there. We'll see what happens with this election. Next week, we'll talk about this. Like I said, it's very exciting to see that we're going to have a new position. We'll see Congress and how the voting goes there. But the markets may or may not be happy about what goes on. And we'll have to see what happens over the next few weeks as to how it all sinks in. And then if there is, in fact, let's put it this way. The presidential election goes that Clinton gets in, and that was what was quote unquote supposed to make the markets happy, and markets are happy for a couple of days and start rolling. That's a big sign that things are not good. We need to see a sustained move towards the end of the year, especially as we're getting into the season where you usually see a very good seasonality in terms of market prices. You know, you've heard of the Santa Claus rally and all that, but this is the time of year that we should be seeing it. And if in fact markets don't go along with what the game plan is, that's when you need to start to think about getting protection for your portfolio and shrinking positions towards the end of the year, especially if you know a few episodes back, we talked about what to expect from capital gains, which may in fact be a little bit more onerous for investors. If Clinton gets in, there may be some sales happening this year to make sure to get out of the way of any potential capital gains tax increase in the next few years. So just think about that. All right, we'll end it there. Thanks for joining me. Go over to the site, The Disciplined Investor, to find out all the things you need to find out about this show and all the notes, et cetera, and past shows. Do a search of your favorite guest that's been on the show. And, of course, all the other things we talked about on this and past discussions, okay? You can subscribe, of course, on iTunes and follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter name that you need to follow. Just one word, the Twitter handle, Andrew Horowitz. I'll see you next week.
Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.